This special episode of Theatre of the World has been brought to you by Dead Technology Memoirs, a new play being performed at La Mama for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
It's a black comedy about murder, obsession, legal recordings, time travel, pop music and number puzzles. Mark will be in it, Chris will be in it. It was written and directed by James, and if you're at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April, the 2nd to the 12th, 2015, come along and see this show.
If you need any more information or you want to book tickets, visit lamama.com.au.
Mail Kim.
The world's fallen fanfare.
Man Bites God presents Theatre of the World.
Welcome to a special episode of Theatre of the World. Theatre of the World, a comedic podcast where we invite you into our parlour and through a series of anecdotes, poems, songs and stories, we take one theme and we drive it into the ground like a spike through a vampire's heart. Today's theme is drama.
Yes.
Drama.
I thought that was a very dramatic opening.
It was.
Chris and I were
dramatic.
In awe.
I know, yeah. It was weird because...
Silent awe.
This is essentially... Yeah, that really works well on a podcast. Essentially a radio, and I did the introduction, and then I had the two guys who I do the show with look at me like...
Well, because normally you stumble over more of it.
Yeah, that's true.
I know. I can speak correctly when I have to.
I think maybe we can help that little gap out with a bum bum ba or something.
Yeah.
I know you could use that one if you
sure,
like.
I could or, use a could yeah. or I could.
Yep. Or use the, something recorded.
No, that's all right. Hey, no. Hang on a moment. So I'll say a dramatic line, and you give me your dramatic sting. Different sting every time. First one's good though. Ready? I've just got back from the doctors and I found out that my unborn child is pregnant.
Bam, bam.
Oh, that's pretty good. All right, how about this one? Oh, no, that's your twin sister's face.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right, one more. These aren't the toes that were originally here.
Bam, bam, bam.
This could be useful because should we explain why we're doing this special
drama? Yeah, we
drama?
Should. We
yeah.
should.
Drama, because we're doing a play.
We're doing a play. We're putting on a play.
And so I'm thinking some of Chris's dramatic stings could be useful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's, 9 shows only, April 2nd to the 6th and then 9th to the 12th at La Mama Theatre, which is just off Lygon Street in Carlton. Dead Technology Memoirs, a very funny play, and we thought that we would celebrate that by doing a podcast about some of the other dramas that we have experienced, whether it be portraying on stage or perhaps real-life dramas, I don't know. Mm. I do know one thing, that the Theatre of the World podcast starts only one way, much like a motorbike starts with a key, so our podcast starts with a mark. The fact bombs.
fact bombs. Mark's got a fact bombs.
Dramatic addition.
Dun, dun.
I love that now everything has to have a sting.
Mm. Drama is the second most recent studio album by Bananarama. It was released in 2006 and featured a remix of the 1986 hit Venus by Soft Cell's Mark Almond, as well as 11 brand new tracks.
Drama by Bananarama.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
In 1988, Siobhan Fay left Bananarama to form her own group, Shakespeare's Sister.
Oh, I didn't know that was the... I didn't know Shakespeare's Sister.
I didn't know it was connected at all.
I quite like that song, the history song, whatever that was called.
The name Shakespeare's Sister was an adaptation of the title of a song by The Smiths, which was a reference to Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own, which featured a fictitious character, Judith, who is the sister of William Shakespeare. William Shakespeare being a playwright of some note.
A controversial playwright of some note.
Yeah. Was he?
Well, controversial in that he may not have been the playwright.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Whee.
Francis Bacon may have written his plays and then gone on to paint amazing pictures.
Yeah. Mm.
Centuries later.
Interesting side bomb.
Oh, we got side bombs now.
Oh, Jesus.
One of the members of Bananarama is Karen Woodward, who has the same last name as me.
That is a side bomb.
That was a side bomb. No sting there.
Theatre.
Can I tell you about one of my first theatrical experiences? Perhaps where
Please
I got
do.
Perhaps where I got the acting bug was in grade six, 1987. I got to be in a play called Pirates at the Barn, and I got to be the lead pirate.
Wow.
Yeah, decades before Johnny Depp wandered into the ethos, I got to portray the bad guy, big, acty pirate. And the best thing, one of the best, or two of the best things, is because he was the bad guy, he had all the best lines in the show. So totally wanted that part. But also, he got to wear a cool costume with the tricorn hat and the big, huge, he had a huge beard because I think his name was like, you know, Blackbeard or something beard. I don't know, beige beard or whatever beard was out of copyright. And the beard that they got for the show, even though it was grade six, was a proper stage beard. Like it had little plastic hinges in it so it actually aligned and moved with your jaw. And even though it was a big curly beard, it wasn't just kind of like, you know, tie behind the head with a bit of elastic. And it looked really good when you wore it. I mean, you're still a grade six guy in a beard. No one's believing it. But the beard is doing a lot of the heavy lifting in that character. And because grade six, everybody gets a go. What happens is there were two different casts. So we got to do the second and the fourth show, and the other grade got to do the first and the third show. So there was another Blackbeard the Pirate, which is fine. No worries with that. Sharing the glory. So I put the beard on for my first night, for my opening night, the second show of the run. And I'm all excited, and something's wrong. The beard feels and smells funny.
No.
It's been worn by the guy beforehand, but, you know, I mean, that's all right. It's just a beard. Beards between friends. but it smells funny and weird, and to the point where I'm getting a little bit dizzy. Because it sort of smells almost chemically, like it's weird. I was like, oh, no, this is bad. But, hey, everyone, show must go on. So professional that I was, although slightly swoony, I wander on stage. I'm big and shouty and actory, and I do my thing, and I get my laughs, and I sort of wander off stage. I put the beard down, and as I'm sort of saying to the teacher, I think the beard smells funny. It's a bit weird. The teacher says, oh, yeah, Ben, who was the kid who played Blackbeard on the first performance, yeah, he had a blood nose during the first night. And I said, well, did you want to mention that a little sooner? Maybe get the beard cleaned?
Ugh.
Drama.
Did it affect your performance in Act Two?
Well, you know... Show must go on. Yeah. I thought about coming on with a razor.
Yeah.
Oh, that's better.
That's better.
Anyway, there you go. Mm. Show must go on. Examples of the show must go on.
Yeah.
I'm very much a show must go on kind of guy. Like I've been on stage a fair bit, and I've had my voice go. I've been hitting the shins. I've had scenery fall down. I've had scenery not work. I've had actors not come on. You know, the show's got to go on. You don't ever want to let the audience know that something terrible, that there's blood in your beard from another boy.
Yes.
I was in a high school theatrical production of the play Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh.
It was a fantastic play.
Oh,
very funny. Very clever.
Yeah.
Starred Hamish Blake.
He's quite famous, isn't he?
He's very famous.
He's a famous Australian man international viewers.
He's a comedian.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was an actually really good production. Because we were all high school, so we were all sort of 17, 18, sort of.
All the polish of a high school show.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, stepping up.
But we'd gone to a lot of effort, and we had, you know, proper stage makeup, and so there was, you know, proper molded nose for Cyrano de Bergerac.
I would say very important.
Yeah. But it was we went with the sort of grotesque kind of gnarled sort of features, and so everyone kind of had some sort of form of sort of facial putty, and then we all had beards and moustaches, and I played several characters. I was one of the poets. I was one of the soldiers. I was the lead pickpocket, and I had a massive curly moustache applied to my face, and I spoke like this.
Why?
I don't know.
Because that's how they speak in France.
Well, it would have been weird if I spoke like this.
I am a picking your pocket.
tonight, you young villains. Sort of a bit like that. But there was in the
wow, I was there. I was amazing. Transported.
pre-revolutionary France.
Where did Mark go? All I saw was this, you know, 18th century pickpocket.
Yeah.
With a putty nose.
With a weird mustache.
There's a battle scene towards the end of the play, and where Cyrano and Christian are sitting to the front of the stage. All the other soldiers are sort of sitting, waiting for that final push. I had a few sort of pre-rolled cigarettes. You know, it was my prop to kind of to use in that scene. And so I was sitting there and put this hand-rolled cigarette in my mouth, and then unbeknownst to me, I'd say probably about 80 to 90% of the tobacco that was in it fell out. So what I in fact had was a cylinder of very thin, very flammable paper in my mouth. And then so when I struck a match and applied it to the end of this this now hollow cigarette, I went up.
Oh,
it went up in an inferno. And then, because I had quite a bushy imitation moustache, which had been applied to my face with some sort of spirit gum type thing that also turned out to be quite flammable.
Uh-oh.
There was an explosion on my face. I just went with it.
Yeah.
I went with it, just continued acting.
How?
With my face.
Without eyebrows.
How?
Yeah.
These cigarettes are of low quality.
Yeah. I think I pretended that there'd been a mortar attack or something.
Just on your
just
face.
Subtly in the background. Didn't want to upstage anyone, but turned out I did upstage pretty much everyone.
I think I feel kind of left out that I haven't had a fake facial hair disaster on stage.
Oh, that's all right.
Completely left out.
You know, the you're still a young man. Maybe on the horizon.
Yeah, maybe in Dead Technology Memoirs.
Maybe Dead Technology Memoirs.
Maybe you will have a fake beard.
Thinking about it, yeah.
We'll make you wear a fake beard made out of sparklers.
Fuel. Pure fuel.
Kindling.
That, I wish I'd seen that.
I wish it was
on video.
Something. It was quite, yeah. I think a few of those performances were video, but
you know what?
Sadly, I don't think that was one that was.
In this day and age, there would be 15 camera angles for
I
that.
I know. I would have been. I could have been YouTube.
Yeah, I know exactly.
It's
you.
True.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
You'd be Mustache Boy. Yeah. I'm so glad.
Face Fire Boy.
Idiot teenage actor sets face on fire.
And then keeps going as if face not on fire.
Improvises mortar attack.
I'm so grateful that, because I'm a terrible actor. I mean, that's why I'm just directing this play, because it took me a long time. Like, I got a lot of parts. I used to enjoy acting, but I think I just came to a weird conclusion somewhere along the line that I said to myself, James, screaming is not acting. And that's all I used to go, hello, I am acting. I'm very loud and gesticulating. I'm big. Oh, just shit ass. And I'm so glad that all of my terrible acting blunders happened not in the age of YouTube, like that there isn't, except for Chris, there's almost no documentary evidence of the terrible, terrible performances I used to give. I look back on, like, I got some really great parts and I reckon I just fucked them all up. And at the time, I reckon I thought I was ace.
You're nailing it.
Oh, so embarrassing to think about that now. Like, I was in, what's the famous thing that's good? I was in The Crucible.
Ah, nice.
And I played the lead. I was John Proctor in The Crucible. Mm. And I look back, and I remember at the time going, yeah, fucking nailed it. And then now I look back on that, and I'm like, this 18-year-old kid just on stage yelling everything. Oh, God, wearing little pantaloons. Oh, God. Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Plymouth certainly gets around.
Look at Plymouth now.
Where? There. Well, I declare.
Look at Plymouth now.
Everyone who's anyone has one.
Or two, they do. They certainly do.
I just can't understand it.
Well, look at Plymouth now.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean.
Darling, where have you been?
I've got a segment.
What?
Oh. That we have traditionally called Chris's website.
And that's not the Chris's website theme.
It's close enough.
It goes like this.
Chris's website. Na 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 na.
Bum bum bum.
Lovely. That was very nice.
Chris's website.
Thank you very much for that intro.
You're welcome.
So, my website today, I did a bit of research. I thought it would be nice, given we're doing drama, given we have some connection to the theatre, I thought it would be nice to share some online plays that one may download and access.
Free online plays?
Free, for free.
Plays that are free of copyright? You just perform it with your friends?
You can just perform it, for, you know, as much as you like, frankly.
Is this a different website to the weird Christian plays that you...
Actually, it is, but it's not all that different.
Oh.
So the website that I'm talking about this time is Christian Skit Scripts, which is the sister website to Let's Skit Busy.
Ouch.
By Fred Passmore, who's written all these scripts. He seems to have written hundreds of scripts.
Yeah.
And I do urge you to go to this site, even if you don't need a skit. I do urge you to go there.
That's everybody.
Because it does look like a 1998 GeoCities website. Every single script has had a GIF designed with the title, like a banner GIF for every... Like, there's probably about 50 scripts there. I'm going to give you a few of the titles.
Sure.
The Great Church Robbery.
Somebody stole my faith.
Oh, I wish that had been the tagline.
Faith off.
Crazy for Christ.
Couldn't that describe many of the high school shootings?
Yeah.
Is that what it's about? It's a wacky comedy about a high school shooting?
Yep. Jerusalem's Most Wanted. Hey.
That's a Jesus. That's Jesus. Because you know who... That's Detective Inspector Pilot.
Yeah. Yep.
He's always washing his hands. He's a forensic expert.
The Stupid Dummy's Guide to Higher Self-Esteem, which I've got to tell you, I'll give you... I have actually read through these plays. They're very short. They're 10-minute type little sketches. But the most of them end with some character who has a lack of faith... being turned around by a crazy person who's turned up to... a crazy person. The Stupid Dummy's Guide to Higher Self-Esteem is a woman who's published a book about how to improve your self-esteem, who clearly doesn't have very high self-esteem.
Oh, she's my doing God,
a, she's
irony.
Doing, what a twist.
She's doing a book launch, and then a man comes up and introduces her to the concept of loving God, which will give you... which is all the self-esteem you need, is that God loves you, so it's okay. And then she realizes that he's right, and she didn't really need to read the book at all.
She
didn't need to read the book because she'd written it.
Yeah. She had it memorized.
And then they went off to have coffee to talk more about God. So that's The Stupid Dummy's Guide to Higher Self-Esteem.
I think it's my favourite part of that story is that a woman with low self-esteem probably needs a man to put her on the right path.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
That's good. International Women's Day, everyone.
There is also an astounding script that, if you're going to read one script from this site, I recommend that you read The Battle of the Sexes Round 1. Because it's
the original.
Yeah, it is essentially a... commercial FM networks equivalent applied to the Adam and Eve story. So it's basically Adam and Eve having a kind of a standard male versus female argument as they get kicked out of the Garden of Eden and then meet the snake.
They get evicted. They're voted out of the garden.
Yep. So Fred Passmore, when he writes these scripts, is extremely prescriptive about stage directions and
He's got a vision.
Like, it is. It's actually difficult to read them because there are so many parentheses. This is what the actor will do while saying this line, things for every single line.
So he's kind of an auteur.
Yeah. But he also gives you some tips about how to stage it up front.
Sure, that's helpful.
Because it's very complex.
Yeah.
And
for set... $5, he'll come and direct it.
Yeah. Probably.
We'll direct for Christ.
So there is a play which is called The Guy with the Cardboard Christ, which is set on a park bench.
That's actually a good title.
Yeah, no, it is good. It's a good title.
Good title for an album by the Smiths.
So the premise is there's a guy sitting on a park bench who is a non-believer. He's an atheist.
Mm.
And then a man comes... And sits down next to him holding a cardboard Christ, and they have a discussion about his friend Christ that he goes to the movies with and goes to does everything with his cardboard Christ. Okay, so basically this is the whole script. So what you need is one actor who will sit on the park bench,
yeah.
One actor who's going to walk around holding a cardboard Christ, yeah. And you need to make a cardboard Christ.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So this is what Fred lets us know about the guy with the cardboard Christ.
These are the stage directions?
This is stage directions.
Okay.
So first of all, he gives us a synopsis, which will give you a better sense.
Sure.
A sincere but misguided fellow carries about with him a life-size cardboard cutout depicting Jesus, which he represents to others as his saviour. A parable about the way that some only trust in an image they have of the Lord, but don't know him personally as their saviour.
Thanks for explaining that.
Sorry, hang on. Has Fred referred to his little comedy sketches as parables?
Yeah, they're parables.
Oh, well, there's an inflated opinion of oneself, isn't it? Aren't parables in the Bible? Didn't Jesus tell parables, Fred? You and Jesus? You fucking cunt. Sorry, go on.
Next. The characters. Jerry, the guy with the cardboard Christ.
The guy with the cardboard Christ. Yep. Better title.
Alan, the person he approaches to share it with.
Sure.
Okay, brackets. The character of Alan may be changed to that of a female if needed or desired.
Yes.
But also called Alan?
No, Ellen.
Yeah. But Jerry's character has several gender-oriented jokes in the script, so it needs
about
to be male.
Cock.
Yeah.
unless you change the lines to reflect the difference.
Oh, whoa, slow down. So if I wanted to cast a woman,
yes,
I would perhaps need to make the character more like a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, Fred. Fred and Jesus both write parables.
Yep.
And God makes men and women, and so does Fred.
Yeah. So, costumes. Casual clothes.
Yeah.
Casual clothes.
But you can only perform this play on a Friday.
So here's the thing. Props.
Mm.
There's a prop in this show. Have you picked what it's going to be?
Is it a park bench?
Yes. Prop. The upper part of a life-size cardboard cutout with a picture of Jesus on the front.
Only the upper part?
Yes.
It's not even the whole Jesus.
No.
What a piece of shit.
Of course. You can make a smaller scale cutout of 3 feet high.
So you're saying Jesus was a midget?
Yes. It's just a matter of drawing it on a white foam core board and cutting it out.
Look, it's just that.
Just that.
Just do it.
Simple as that.
It's become a DIY.
If you don't have the confidence to do that, just ask God.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Fred will pop around and do it for you. He's got several in his backyard.
The setting is a park bench. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a note. There's an additional note.
Yeah.
If you weren't clear about how this was going to work, here's the additional note.
I feel
note.
Like I've got it. I feel like I could stage this.
Yeah. Exactly. But Fred has some more information
okay,
to pass
well, that's,
on.
No, yeah. Fair enough.
Note.
Yep.
The cardboard Christ must be just that, a cutout to make this skit work. You can't just pretend the guy's holding something and mime it. It has to be visible and in hand to work, or the performance will make no sense.
Jesus must be visible, otherwise it makes no sense.
Very
God must be visible, otherwise it makes no sense.
No irony.
It makes no sense!
Doing this as a cheat is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Don't ruin it by trying that.
No, very Brechtian.
Don't ask people to have faith that you are holding a cutout of Jesus. You must show them that you are holding a cutout of Jesus.
And you can't just use a real person either in place of the cutout.
No.
What if they're a particularly bad and wooden actor?
Yeah, well, this totally invalidates.
What if they're a midget?
This totally
what
invalidates.
If just half a person, the top half of a person on a stick.
Does Fred have a play called Half a Christ is Good Enough?
This totally invalidates the script premise and will confuse the viewer. Just draw a picture and glue it on some cardboard if you want, but make it a flat image and it will work.
You
don't
dickhead.
Fake it. Don't fake it by miming or using a real person, please. And if you do try to do it, don't tell me about it. It's
oh my
desperate.
God.
It's living, desperate.
Living don't, in ignorance.
How many times has he like he's gone, oh, somebody's putting on my cardboard cutout Christ play and he's turned up and gone, oh, fuck.
Fuck, they've got a half person on, and it's a woman or on a skateboard.
They've got a bat on a bat.
Jerry's being played by a dog.
special only this week, all plays half Christ.
So I totally recommend that you should head on over to ChristianSkitScripts.com.
Skitscripts.
And if you don't like it all religious, though, I've got to say, Let's Skit Busy, which is the sister site, still has a little bit of a moral theme to it. So
really?
Just be careful as
well,
you read.
What a pile of skit.
Oh, well done. No, bravo, you.
Schoenberg loves me, Schoenberg loves me, Schoenberg loves me. When I'm looking for things for my family and home, it's Schoenberg, Schoenbergs. Oh, they love me so. Tell you how I know. They understand me. Toujours l'amour, I feel secure at Schoenberg, Schoenbergs. There's a Schoenbergs near you.
I read a story, I don't know, last season or season before, about a character that I created called the Lil Nuzzler. Well, the Lil Nuzzler is back, gentlemen and other gentlemen in this room, but possibly ladies who are listening who aren't in a religious play.
Or you can recast the ladies if you like, if you have to change the lines.
Yeah. This is a fairly dramatic, you know, kind of scene. So maybe some sort of like cop music, like, you know, sort of dun-dun-dun kind of music under this.
I'll just sample that.
That'd be fine. We have to take a break.
Copyright.
I think Chris is having a stroke. We should stop. All right. This is called The Return of the Lil Nuzzler. The bank robbery had gone wrong. Very, very wrong. Poor planning, mused Evans to himself as he looked out of the window and saw the cops putting a perimeter around the bank and training their guns on him and the other masked men inside. They were supposed to be in and out in 5 minutes, well under police response time, but a series of bad blunders had led to this hostile, dangerous stalemate. Firstly, Cobb was supposed to bring an oxy-fueled acetylene torch to break into the bank vault. Instead, he had just brought along a normal torch, a flashlight. And even though it was a very powerful flashlight, it was not going to be able to cut through the inch-thick steel of the bank vault. Evans had been so disgusted with Cobb that he had shot him there and then. Amateur. He spat. But Cobb was already dead, leaving Evans to wish that he had called him an amateur first and then shot him. He was always getting the order wrong. Another problem had been with the masks. Gil was supposed to have picked up 4 ski masks for them to wear, but had become carried away with his sense of the dramatic, and instead he had purchased 4 enormous wooden African tribal masks. Each mask was very heavy and was designed to be hung on the walls of trendy apartments, not used to conceal identities during the commission of a crime. Rogers had managed to use thick tape to affix his mask to his face, but had broken his neck when he had tried to lift his head. He had died instantly, and they'd left him back at the hideout. Gil himself had stubbornly insisted on wearing his mask to the bank, holding it awkwardly in place with both his hands. However, the mask's ornate peacock feather headdress had become entangled in the bank's ceiling fan. This had violently flipped Gil backwards and knocked him out. He lay unconscious at Evans' feet. Evans leaned down and gently tapped his face until Gil came to his senses. He looked up into Evans' eyes. I guess the masks weren't that great an idea, he said feebly. Amateur, replied Evans, and then shot him in the face. Evans' only consolation as he heard the police megaphone was that at least he had got the order of that right this time. Hey, you! The man with all the post-it notes over his face! You're completely surrounded! Come out and give yourself up! Came the announcement from the cops. Evans had to disguise his face with post-it notes because he didn't want to wear the stupid African tribal mask. He pointed his gun at one of the nurses and screamed, I've got plenty of hostages in here. Get me a fast car and get out of my way or I start killing them one by one. All of the hostages were nurses because it turns out they were trying to rob a sperm bank. Once again, this had been the result of poor planning. Why was there a vault in a sperm bank? It was in case anyone famous decided to donate some celebrity sperm. But the sperm bank was in a disreputable part of town and there was no famous ejaculate inside the vault. There wasn't even ordinary ejaculate inside the vault. If by some miracle Cobb's powerful flashlight had managed to pierce the vault's door, they would have only found some sperm bank stationery and some promotional sperm bank hats. These were of little or no value. The police didn't want to antagonize Evans any further and decided to put their best hostage negotiator on the job. The Little Nuzzler. The Little Nuzzler was a cute 8-year-old girl called Pixie Ann. She walked confidently out into the middle of the street, dressed in pajamas with little flowers on them. She carried a stuffed toy giraffe. The giraffe's name was Simon. Today, Simon was wearing a tiny little policeman's uniform. She also carried a tiny red megaphone which had a picture of a bee on it. It was unclear how this pigtailed 8-year-old girl had so quickly risen through the ranks to become the city's most successful and respected hostage negotiator. Her personnel file simply had the word adorable written on it over and over again by a series of increasingly important people. She raised the toy megaphone to her mouth and screamed in a tiny voice, Hey, you baddie! You better give up or I will come in there and nuzzle you. I will nuzzle and nuzzle and nuzzle at your neck. The little nuzzler then simulated what this would be like by making little nuzzle noises, which sounded like a baby lion cub nestling lovingly into her mother's thick, warm fur. Arr, arr, screamed the little nuzzler into the megaphone. Evans was so overcome by the cute power of the little nuzzler's words that he let his grip loosen on his gun and it dropped to the ground. As it did so, it discharged and fired a bullet directly at the little nuzzler. The bullet missed her, but it did take the top off Simon the giraffe's ear. The little nuzzler, temporarily alarmed by the sudden loud noise, looked down at her giraffe's missing ear, sat down in the middle of the street, and began to cry big weeping sobs of heart-wrenching tears. Evans was so aghast at what he had done that he snatched up a number of band-aids from the counter of the bank and ran out into the road to see if he could help patch Simon up. He had taken 3 steps out the door before a police sniper shot him in the neck and he collapsed to the ground, where he eventually bled out and died. The little nuzzler approached Evans and took the band-aids from his lifeless hands and solemnly used them to patch up Simon's damaged ear. Police Chief Withers, who had been crouching behind one of the police cruisers, turned to the patrolman next to him and said, It's a damn shame. That stuffed toy giraffe was only 2 months from retirement. The patrolman had no idea what he meant. The end.
Bum, bum, ba.
Thank you. Tune in next time for more adventures of the Little Nuzzler. She fights crime with cute.
Yeah.
That's her superpower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Being cute. Mm-hmm.
It's good power.
As I was reading that story, I forgot that I would have to make a cute noise, and it was really confronting.
Yeah.
It's confronting to make a cute noise in front of 2 grown men. Yeah. Like, it's confronting.
Yeah.
But I carried on because the podcast listeners are important to me.
We were glaring at you as well.
You were. You were looking at me like the 2 old guys from The Muppet Show, frankly.
Like survive, like a superpower of just being cute. I think that's pretty much what quokkas have. Like
yeah.
That's how quokkas. That's their survival skill.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, they're almost extinct, so it's not a very good skill.
But they're so fucking cute.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
That's the shitty survival skill then. Because if you're cute to certain things, you go, yeah, oh, that's cute. But if you're cute to other things, you go, well, that's harmless and edible.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Is it cute? Now they mostly live on an island where they have no natural predators.
Yes.
And so they just get by just by being
except
cute.
Except the humans. Yeah.
Who go and kick them.
Yeah. Well, not only kick them, but feed them food that they probably shouldn't eat, and then they get heart disease.
But they look so cute when they eat Mars.
But babies are cute. But if I threw a baby in with some crocodiles, the crocodiles wouldn't go, nah. The crocodiles would go, ah.
They might. You never know.
Yeah.
Animals are weird.
Mm.
If I threw a baby in with a group of pirates,
they
would go, ah. And if I threw a baby...
Getting back to your pirate play. What was it called again?
It was called Pirates at the Barn.
So was it a farmyard pirate?
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
I think what it was there was treasure hidden in a barn, and the pirates had come ashore to reclaim their treasure. So the idea
like
was
in the American Midwest.
No, not necessarily. There are other barns. You know, there are barns. I mean, there must be farm creatures closer to the ocean than that.
I suppose.
Maybe, I can't remember now, but maybe it was set in England.
Maybe.
Where there were a lot of pirates and indeed a lot of farms, like Cornwall. There are farms there and there's an ocean.
Yeah. Oh, I would have thought there were farms in the Caribbean as well.
Were you the sort of...
Barns? Barns? I
Jamaican barns, you know, full of rum.
Welcome to my rum farm. We farm.
They farm the
makes
rum.
Makes sense.
Pigs.
I mean, that's what pirates would be there. They love rum.
Yep.
Or so the literature tells me.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Jeez. I can't believe that you're watching grade sixes put on this play and you're up the back going, as if there'd be a barn close to the ocean. Like, that's your thing. That guy's beard is clearly fake and full of another boy's blood, but the barn and the ocean don't mix. Doesn't make any sense.
So were there barnyard animals?
No.
Why was it a barn then?
I don't know. It was called Pirates at the Barn. I don't even know if there was a barn. I can't remember.
Was there a barn dance?
Possibly. I think they stormed the barn. There was a barn storm.
Barn storming?
Yes. I don't know. Yeah. I think Jimmy Barnes was in it.
Was it? Perhaps it was on the Autobahn.
Possibly. Pirates on the Autobahn.
They were holding up cars on the Autobahn.
It was a musical written by Kraftwerk.
Oh.
Pirates on the Autobahn. Pirates on the Autobahn.
I do. I want to see it.
Because your pirate play.
You're obsessed. It really has captured your imagination, hasn't it?
No, because it reminded me of a production of. Into the Woods that I was in. Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods.
Was there a barn in the woods?
No. But there is a cow.
Right.
But
what's a cow doing in the woods, Mark?
Understand. Well, the cow...
Shouldn't that be in the barn
it
near
escaped.
The pirates?
This was, again, a school production of it. And so we did the split cast thing because obviously, you know, got to give everyone a go.
Sure.
I was cast as the narrator, which is a great role, actually.
Did you get to sing?
Yes, you get to sing. Get to sing. You get killed.
That's exciting. Yeah. It's not often the narrator gets killed.
No,
it's
gets a twist. Killed. Gets killed partway into the second act, I think.
Oh, yeah. Disappointing.
Yeah. No, it's great.
You get go and have a smoke.
Gets killed by a giant.
Do you come back as a ghost?
No, but in the actual sort of original sort of stage version of Into the Woods, not the film version. I haven't seen the film version that recently came out, but apparently this doesn't happen. Is that a lot of the actors play multiple characters, and so the narrator is actually another character in the play as well.
Sure.
So you can sort of make your own sort of little sub story up around that, if you like. I suppose I don't know or not. Just go and get an ice cream at interval or something. but
this is like the instructions that come with the Christian sketches.
But the
make sure it's a vanilla ice cream, yeah, not a chocolate. Right. And if you get a chocolate ice cream, don't tell me about it.
But it was that thing where you have shared costumes between the two actors who perform on different nights. And
I know it well.
Yes. And so, oddly, like, I mean, the narrator didn't have, like, much of a costume. It was just a sort of jacket and a tie. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
No pants.
Obviously. But
no wonder he got killed.
But the jacket, like, because the other guy who played the narrator on the other nights was, I mean, is a little bit bigger than me.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, you're a thin man.
I'm a thin man. I was slight, and I was very slight back in those days as well. And so I looked, like, the guy who played on the other nights was younger than me by, I think, about 2 years.
Sure.
But I looked like I was 11 because I was wearing a jacket that was much too big for me.
You're at work experience.
Yeah, it undermined my performance, it undermined more my authority as the narrator. As the narrator, I'm supposed to have this sort of authoritative air, and I'm now wearing a jacket that's two sizes too big for me.
Oh my God, look, that hat rack is singing. Did it ever occur to you to just wear a different jacket?
I think I was told not to by the director. I think they wanted a specific coloured jacket that I didn't own.
That's strange.
In my size. Yeah, it was strange. It was weird. Don't understand that decision. It was a misstep, possibly. Chris, have you worn any jackets that have been too big?
I once wore a jacket that was too small, and I wore it for a little bit, and then I took it off because it was uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Good story. Dun, dun, dun.
Free podcast, everybody.
Hey, I've got two things. Mm-hmm. The first one is I figure that given we're talking about the theatre, I just want to warn people about how dangerous the theatre is, because you know when you work anywhere, you know there are certain things that you should never do.
Never like say Macbeth.
Never, ever say Macbeth.
I hate those theatre traditions. I hate them.
Yeah, but in a normal workplace, it's never get drunk at the Christmas party and, you know, make inappropriate passes at other
That's a criminal offence. That's different.
Never put your workmate's stapler in your mouth. I don't know. There are all types of things you shouldn't do.
Where did you work where that was a rule?
Never rape a quokka.
I put together a list of the things that if you are going to get into the theatre, you should know about that you should never do.
Hang on. Whoa. You've created a list of things.
I don't refer to this as a segment. It's merely just a list of things.
Because I have a list of things that I was going to do later on. Mm. But now, Chris, he's stolen my thunder.
It is a list of things. But it's my list of things, which makes it unique.
You sure it's not a sequence of items?
No, that's...
Sequence of items, you're stealing mine.
No, it's not a sequence of items. Neither is it really a list of things. It's more a bag of tricks.
Oh, Chris's bag of tricks. Chris's bag of tricks. Go on.
Here they are. So, here's the thing. These are real. I didn't make these up, but there are a lot of them.
God, wow, way to sell it. Right, everyone?
You know?
Settle in. It's a long...
This bag of tricks, it's a big bag. Yeah.
So, I think everybody knows these ones. You know, never say good luck.
No.
Because, that's not good.
Yeah. I hate that.
You can't say Macbeth.
Can't say Macbeth.
You can never leave the stage completely dark because of the ghosts come.
Or if someone might trip over.
Right. You can't use a peacock feather on stage.
What?
It's true.
Why?
You're not meant to use a peacock feather because it brings bad luck.
Peacock, certainly. Yeah.
Well, so if you were staging a dramatic play of the Little Nuzzler, you would have to have a completely different African mask. It would have to have an ostrich feather.
You would have to have a fake peacock feather.
Well, I'm not going to do that just for some shitty tradition. I've got a vision for Little Nuzzler. If you read my carefully constructed stage directions carefully, you'll see that it has to. And if you don't use a peacock feather, for God's sake, don't tell me about it.
You never whistle in a theatre. This has actual roots, the never whistle in a theatre.
Why?
Because
whistling is annoying.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody hates it.
What if you're playing an annoying character? What are you playing a character that has to wait for a bus?
Who whistles while they work.
That's one dwarf taken completely out. Whistly was a dwarf, wasn't he? Donna, on Blitzen, on Sneezy, on Grumpy, on Whistly.
Yeah. It's actually it has a true origin, which is that when they started rigging sets, they hired sailors because they were used to rigging ropes and pulleys and stuff so that they could lift and drop sets in theatre,
yeah.
and they communicated with whistles. So that was how they got their cues before we had electronics. So if you whistled and the sailor there, probably a pirate, probably has some rum in his barn, has you whistle, the set drops on your head, dead. So that's why you should never whistle in the theatre.
By the way, how annoying would it have been going to a play and just hearing a series of whistles from backstage?
Yeah, that's the other thing, obviously. Never say the last lines of the show before opening night. I didn't realise this one, what? And we've been rehearsing Dead Technology Memoirs now yeah. for a couple of weeks, and I've already said the closing lines.
Because it's rehearsals.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
And Frank has the closing line of the night.
Oh, that's true.
And he's done it several times. Oh,
fuck, we need to.
He's a proper actor.
We need to use new closing lines. Never paint the green room green.
Because it's ugly.
Yeah, I guess so.
This is, by the way, because it confuses the sailors.
Yeah.
This is why I think I've stayed away from theatre for a long time.
There's
a lot of pretentious fuckwits in
theatre. It's rife. It's rife with danger. Never place shoes or hats on chairs or tables inside the dressing rooms.
Where do you put them? Just up your ass.
Yeah, clearly. Never open a show on a Friday?
Well, that's more commercial than anything else. You want a couple of tryout days. Opening on a Wednesday.
How good's this one? Never knit in the wings.
Why?
Because you might accidentally stab someone. By the way, who's knitting in the wings? Yeah. The stage crew.
Ball of wool might drop and someone might get tangled in it.
Yeah.
Look, it's because in the old days they used to use old women to move the scenery back and forth, and they used to communicate to each other, knit one, pearl one.
They used to throw
a giant flag that said now.
It's a very slow play.
Never wear new makeup on opening night. Apparently,
what wear yesterday's makeup? Put on your makeup the day before.
Makeup has to be new at some point.
Just makeup that you haven't. You can use new makeup once you've had opening night. You can open your new ones at that.
So that
point.
Sounds like a really good way to get conjunctivitis at the start.
It's true.
Start of the run.
Yeah. What if another boy has had a blood nose in your makeup?
Yes. Never say the theatre is closed because that could invoke the plague. You instead say it's dark.
But not completely dark because the ghosts will come out.
Yeah. Never give flowers stolen from a graveyard to a leading actor on opening night. No, only closing night because they're stolen from a grave, so it's the end of the run. It's the death of the show.
Why are you stealing flowers from a grave anyway?
Because apparently it used to be a pretty cheap way to get flowers.
Well, I'd say it's still a fairly cheap way to get flowers, but you could also pick them off the nature strip.
It's true. Here are the colours that it's bad luck to have on stage. Never wear blue, yellow or green.
Yeah, sure.
They're all things. But you can wear blue if you have silver.
Yeah, yeah, great, whatever. Sure.
Is there a reason for that or is it just bullshit?
Yes. Well, apparently the blue was that because blue dye was very expensive in the olden days, that if you wore blue on stage, then that possibly meant that you were going to go bankrupt because you'd spent a lot of money to get blue costumes.
What if it was a really good play and was just really successful?
But if silver, if you use silver, it meant that you had a stack of money and it didn't matter. You were just saying, we're fine.
Sell the silver at the end of
it. Yeah, that's right. For profit.
Yeah.
The ghosts of the theatre should be given one night a week alone on the stage, usually Monday night.
To do what? Their own play.
Yeah, pretty much. Otherwise, they mess around with your play. And the final one is never exit. This is my favourite one, and I have to remember this when we're performing in the La Mama. Oui. Never exit the dressing room right foot first. I never knew. To be honest, I've been doing theatre for a long time. There are some things in there which I'm reasonably sure I've done wrong before.
Head first.
But I'm guessing it's basically just a lot of bad directors and actors who are blaming everything their inabilities to.
I've never heard such a load of shit in my entire life. And let me tell you, the thing about those shitty traditions is not so much that they're just clearly arbitrary.
Yeah.
It's the tone of voice that some cunt in your show points them out to you?
Yes.
Oh, no, you've said the name of the Scottish play. Shut the fuck up. You're fired.
Yeah.
How's that for bad luck?
Yeah. Macbeth.
We're doing Macbeth. Well, we can't stage Macbeth because Macbeth's in it. When someone says Macbeth, oh, we'll just say the Scottish man.
Do you know historically what the Macbeth thing is? I found this quite interesting. I was reading about this.
I think I did know and then I forgot it.
So
I don't.
The thing about Macbeth was that it often had deaths or injuries while performing the play.
It's probably because it's quite a violent play.
Correct. That's one of the things. But what they were also saying was that Macbeth was so popular that if you were a theatre company that was going bust, your last ditch effort was putting on Macbeth because it was guaranteed a crowd.
Yeah.
But because you had very little money, you probably weren't spending a lot of money on any kind of safety.
Yeah.
So people were going to get injured because you went, wooden swords are so expensive. Let's get some real swords. And, so, yeah.
So snuff plays.
Yeah, basically.
Awesome.
So once you got to Macbeth, you were failing.
What fucking economy are you in where a wooden sword is more expensive than a real one?
Well, because the metal ones are already made.
They're already there. You can just borrow them from someone. But,
you know, pull them out of a corpse in the street.
Yep.
Oh, we could use this.
Dig up a grave of a soldier.
Oh, these flowers will do nicely.
Find a pirate in a barn load
get him drunk on rum.
Yeah.
Swipe his cutlass.
Steal his cutlass.
I was, I don't want to do my list of things now.
Go on, you can.
No,
go.
I don't want to.
Why not?
Because I just feel like there's been too many lists of things.
That's all right.
So
mine hasn't been that good.
Mine doesn't really have any relevance to our topic. So it was.
Okay.
But I want to guilt you into thinking that I'm not doing my list because you stole my premise, which you did.
Actually,
that's bad luck in the theatre.
Well, I was going to
stealing someone's podcast premise.
I was going to tell my little story of bad luck in a theatre.
Yes.
Now's the time.
So do you remember we were doing a Fringe Festival show at the Old Bar?
Yes, I do. I remember that.
And then there was just one of those shows where I had to leave.
I remember
mid-set
that.
Because otherwise I was going to fail drama.
That's right. And Chris and I carried on without you.
Yeah.
And from memory, we had a little effigy of you.
Yeah, yeah.
And we made fun of it.
Oh, my God.
Mercilessly.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
I had to race from Fitzroy to Northcote to go and be in a group-devised theatre piece.
Oh,
that
I'd be racing
going
to
make up my entire grade for that semester of drama.
Yeah.
I believe, by the way, the Man Bites got the original production of Band on the Run.
Yeah, correct. The original production, way before Wings did it.
Well, no, way before the Edinburgh.
Edinburgh
show,
oh, of
Band
course,
on the Run.
Yeah.
I'll have you know with your Wings joke. Theatrical Wings, that is.
Don't miss in them.
Macbeth.
But yeah, so I went and did that, and it was weird. And it was group devised, and so it was strange, and there was like. We had like this physical theatre guy who came and did some sort of choreography with us, and then there was a woman, I can't remember her name, but she's a composer, and she came and worked on some music with us. And the first bit of bad luck was she said, "Oh, I want you all to bring in some music from your childhood," and so I brought in the first record I ever owned, which was. A double A side single from Aha.
Was it Take On Me?
It wasn't Take On Me. It was
Sun Always Shines on TV?
No, it was from the second album. It was a song called Cry Wolf. And the second side was maybe Baby or maybe or something like that. Anyway, it wasn't very good.
A double A side Aha single is like multiplying zeros.
But I brought that in, and like I'd owned that since I was like seven or something like that. And she lost it, and then said, "Oh, I'll buy you another one." I'm like, "Where are you going to fucking find that?"
eBay.
Anyway, so there was that.
There wasn't an eBay then.
And where we were doing this performance was in Northcote, and it's this kind of church hall, quite high ceilings, and it's sort of set up as a regular theatre. But we're the last night of this group devised performance. We did multiple nights, if you can wrap your mind around that. Like there was call to do multiple performances of this, not just the one I had to leave our show for.
Was it a good crowd?
Yeah,
oh, great.
Turned out it was all right. I guess you had. 20 or so in this particular.
And you're at that age. You're at that age where you can bring people.
Yeah, yeah. And then they're also at that age where people come to your thing and then go, "Well, I'm not going to go to anything else. You have to do it ever again." That was a piece of shit.
You're killing your audience.
You've just wasted it.
But we were sort of we were pulling down all the lighting at the end of it, and had really high ceilings, and someone was pulling an extension cord down over the lighting bar, and then the end of the extension cord flipped up over the bar and came down right onto the top of my head.
Ow!
Yeah.
That's real. That's hurt.
Yeah. Also, during a rehearsal, my car was in a clear way and I got a $110 parking fine.
Well,
by the way, these are much better rules for theatre than fucking Macbeth or wearing
don't
green.
Don't park in a clear way.
Don't get hit in the head with an electrical cord.
Don't buy the chocolate chopped up. Yeah.
Mm. Do you know, speaking of group devised, what was the name of it? Do you remember?
Honestly, couldn't tell you.
I've always wanted to write a comedy sketch about like those people who improvise plays, and they come on stage and they're really, you know, vibrant and sunny, and they're like, okay, we're going to put an improvised scene, everyone. We're going to put an improvised scene. But what we need from the audience, right, is we need a character, and then I want to stand up and say, all right, how about this? You play someone who's thought about what you're doing, written a script, rehearsed it, and know that it's pretty successful before putting it in front of an audience.
Burn.
So in working with drama, I felt that the logical thing to do would be to go to Cleverbot Theatre, because obviously that's a segment that is related to the theatre.
What is Cleverbot Theatre?
And Cleverbot Theatre is a artificial intelligence a program that lives on the internet called Cleverbot, where you can I don't know, I was going to build it into my description, but asked the question, I'm like, I don't know how to say this now.
I'm sorry, do you want to start again?
Yeah, let's start again.
All right.
Good point.
We're keeping this in though, right?
Yeah.
So, while we're talking about theatre, I, of course, thought about Cleverbot Theatre, which has been a regular segment on this program.
What is Cleverbot Theatre? I promise I would.
And as James has foreshadowed, Cleverbot is an artificial intelligence program that you can access on the internet where you can ask Cleverbot questions and Cleverbot will answer. In fact, you can say anything you like to Cleverbot and Cleverbot will answer. And so what I thought I would do this week is to take some famous lines from plays and see if Cleverbot could join in playing out a scene from a famous play with me. So I started with a little section of Waiting for Godot to see what Cleverbot.
Fine play, one of my favourite plays.
Yeah, to see what Cleverbot would do. We're waiting for Godot.
Waiting for what?
What?
What time is it at your place?
He said by the tree. Do you see any others?
Number.
I don't know. A willow.
Do you like Moulin Rouge?
So that was pretty weird. That was kind of really weird.
Slightly weirder than the Beckett original.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I was hoping. I was hoping that Cleverbot would bring something completely bizarre to the already bizarre. I changed tack.
Succeeded.
And I decided to hit up a little bit of our friend Bill Shakespeare.
He's
and
not
you
my
may
friend.
You may recognize that I will be playing one of the witches.
Okay.
As I have before.
Really?
What?
Yeah, I played a witch before.
Hecate?
I can't remember, actually. I was one of the witches. When shall we three meet again? In thunder, lightning, or in rain?
Never.
It's Shakespeare known for his brevity.
That will be ere the set of sun.
Is Wikipedia any good?
Upon the heath.
Where's that?
There to meet with Macbeth.
But Macbeth was fluffing his Garfield at the moment.
And I thought, well, I'm clearly not going to get an entire scene out of Cleverbot. So I just thought I'd throw a bunch of random Shakespeare quotes at Cleverbot. And this was the results. To be or not to be, that is the question.
Edinburgh.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears.
What are you talking about? We were talking about One Direction.
This, above all, to thine one self be true.
I think that if you develop more of what we call emotion, then life will start to have meaning.
That's fair enough. It's to thine own self.
Yeah, I know. Sure. Actually, I just misread it.
I mean, you were talking about One Direction.
Yeah. To sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub.
Where's a rub?
There.
What piece of work is a man? How noble in reason.
No, it's really easy.
A horse, my kingdom for a horse.
Okay, Dartless, I don't want to say anything about that.
Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him, Horatio.
I can't tell thee where that saying was born, for I fear no colours.
So he actually kind of got that one.
He almost got that one, yeah.
Something is rotten in the state of Denmark.
Something's au gratin in the house of potatoes.
almost a parody?
Yeah.
Is this a dagger which I see before me?
No, silly. It's a white chocolate chip macadamia nut cookie.
The play's the thing.
It was popular with Chinese people, so Danny released it as a singles album.
Shall I compare these to a summer's day?
I'm not doing it again.
The lady protests too much, methinks.
Haha. Thanks for that, though.
My mistress's eyes are nothing like the sun.
It's okay. I forgive you.
And finally, now is the winter of our discontent.
No, right now it is the autumn.
Thank you very much, Cleverbot Theatre.
I like the one where he said, there's the rub. Where's the rub?
Where's the rub? Yeah.
He took Shakespeare and he turned it into Who's On First.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm gonna break the fourth wall here, so to speak, and say I literally had to take some of those out because he got it right. He totally had the next line, and I went, "That's not going to be very entertaining, is it? If the Cleverbot is actually replying correctly." But
you really do. You're talking to us, and consequently to podcast listeners. So you're always breaking the fourth wall.
It's true. This is my special fourth wall.
It's like a newsreader breaking the fourth wall.
It's the deception. It's behind the scenes. Nobody knows what I edit. That's what I edited.
Well, that seems as good a place as any to grind to a halt. Do we have anything else?
No.
Thanks for listening to this episode, this special podcast. It was inspired by a play that we're all doing for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. And, hopefully we'll see you there if you're in Melbourne for the Comedy Festival in April 2015.
Bum, bum, bum.
Thank you, Chris. If it's past April 2015, you've missed it.
Bam, bam, bah.
Is it too late to cancel the play?
Yeah. I'd certainly want to sack Chris. We'll be back for a full season of Theatre of the World very soon. We hope you've enjoyed this special. Until then, I'm James.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mark. We're sitting in a different order.
So I know.
Why have we said that in a different order?
I mean, I know we're sitting in a different order, but we all know our names, right?
Find episodes and more at theatreoftheworld.com.
So here's a little sketch. It's called Snoop Dogg Visits the Doctor.
Good afternoon, Mr. Snoop Dogg. What seems to be the trouble this day?
Oh, Doctor.
Yeah.
I stubbed me nizzle. It burns when I pizzle.
For shizzle.
Perfect. This is Man Bites God.